welcome to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. I'm Pat Brennan, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Amy Fagan. Amy is Head of Partnerships for Europe, the Middle East and Africa at the Microbit Foundation. Amy, you're very welcome to the TeachNet podcast.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Well, look, before we go any further, I think this is key for listeners who may not be fully au fait with these miniature marvels, the microbits, despite them being in commonplace in Irish schools from anecdotally my experience. But firstly, what is a microbit? And I suppose, where does the Microbit Foundation fit in that ecosystem?
So the microbit, in its simplest explanation, is a tiny programmable computer. So it's a miniature computer with loads of sensors and loads of capabilities to help it engage with the world around it based on how you program it. So in its simple form, it's probably about a credit card size, maybe a little bit smaller. It's designed for use in the classroom. On the front, you've got two buttons, A and B. You've got 25 LEDs in the middle of it. So that's your lights that you can program to show icons and lots of numbers, letters. Those lights, LEDs, are also light sensing. So you've actually got two capabilities with your LEDs there. It's also got a touch sensor on the front and five little electronical pins down the bottom of it, which enables you to connect loads of different accessories, do some simple circuits. Then on the back, you've got a speaker, you've got a microphone. So it's also sound sensing as well as light sensing. And you've also got your accelerometer. So that's probably the most exciting feature. We love them all, but the accelerometer and the magnetometer are probably what gives the microbit its real boost and massively exciting capabilities, because you can do some really incredible things using that technology. And then in terms of the foundation, so the Microbit Educational Foundation, we are a nonprofit organization. We're based in the UK, but we have a global footprint and a team that work internationally. I am based in the partnerships team, and I work with some incredible counterparts, a colleague in the US, one in Brazil, one in Hong Kong. And we split the world up between the four of us, and we work with loads of amazing organizations internationally to work on brilliant projects embedding microbit into different types of education systems, different types of projects. But we also work with all of our foundation colleagues to inspire every child to create their best digital future. That is our mission as an organization. And we're really, really proud to say that as of today, there are 70 million children and young people around the world who have engaged and learned with microbit and explored digital skills with it. And that's happening across at least 85 countries and territories around the world. So that impact over the course of the 10 years that microbit has been available is something that we're really, truly proud of. And we do that work with children and with teachers at its heart. It's incredibly important to us to help those audiences get access to an enriching and meaningful digital experience. It's not all about coding. It's not all about getting all children to become programmers or work in those disciplines, but actually to explore what it means to be creative and use technology to help you do that. So you can use microbit in all those different ways with all those sensors to do projects like explore the temperature in your classroom and a million other projects, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But yeah, we're really, really proud of that impact so far.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant, Amy. And thanks for the work the foundation are doing. And I'll have to put my hand up and say, up until relatively recently, I wasn't aware of the work you're doing, but it just seems to be so joined up. You're coming at it from the right perspective. This is not about the hardware. It's not about the tech. It's coming at it from the teaching and learning perspective. But I suppose very quickly on that, we spoke off air about your background in publishing and that, but how did you come to work with the foundation, or what was your path, I suppose, to your role now as partnership manager?
Well, interestingly, we talked a little bit about this before. So prior to working at the foundation, I actually worked at the TES, the TES or Times Education Supplement. So I had the great fortune to work there for 9 years on the teaching resources platform. Those in education will be likely familiar with that as a repository for teaching resources and brilliant content. And it's been going for a really, really long time. And I was really lucky after doing a master's in publishing in Oxford Brookes University. Did that master's, and that exposed me to the world of educational publishing and how complex it is and how competitive it is, but also that there's incredible content and opportunities out there in that space. And then working in the TES, it was that educational field, but then also an exposure into digital and web and websites and product development and what goes on in a digital business to provide a service and to provide tools that help teachers and help people get access to things that they need. And it was a fantastic experience working there. I met some amazing people over many years. And then when my time there came to an end, I was fortunate enough to have a former colleague who'd moved into the Microbit Educational Foundation. And there was an opportunity on a project to come along and help out with something. And that was my first introduction into the foundation and a really friendly and lovely environment. We work remotely. It helps our capacity. It helps us to move fast. But then when we would get together, it's a really nice experience. And we do that a couple of times a year. And in the foundation, because it's such a mission-driven organization, we are thinking about formal learning. We're thinking about classroom context in the main. There's lots going on for Microbit around extracurricular contexts in all sorts of different types of projects. But because our mission is to inspire every child and to reach every child with a digital education, the best chance you have to achieve that is by going through formal education, working through that classroom context, because all children, we hope, are going to be in school and have that opportunity to get access. But that just because we're prioritizing that, it doesn't mean that those other contexts are any less important to us. So we're constantly trying to do what we can and work in partnership to support those different types of audiences, but keeping those education and classroom contexts front and center of what we do.
Yeah. Just looking here at some of the notes I took. The 70 million, that is phenomenal reach for a little micro board. It's only 10 years, isn't that right?
It's 10 years, It's having its 10th birthday this year, which is really amazing. And, you know, it started at the BBC through a project called Make It Digital, which was a consortium of efforts, you know, across 29 different partner organizations who came together to following the legacy of the BBC Micro. So for people who might remember the BBC Micro, you know.
Unfortunately, I do, Amy. But that's just showing my age. But I digress. Go on.
No, but it's lovely because, you know, off the back of that kind of legacy in terms of that digital legacy of what the BBC Micro kind of offered to so many people in a previous generation, you know, there was a mission to do something similar again for the new generation. And so the Microbit was born out of that desire to build on that legacy and to give students the opportunity to get hands-on with technology. And they did such an amazing job of it that they had to establish the Microbit Educational Foundation off the back of it, because the Microbit as a tool, its potential was just so clear and so obvious to enhance that learning, but also to embed it into as many different contexts as you can possibly imagine. And that can only be done at the local level by people who know those contexts, those curriculums, the challenges in a particular education setting. That is why we work in partnership. And it's the job I do every day, and I'm very fortunate to do it, is to have those conversations with people who are working on the ground. They're either going into schools or they're supporting teachers in other ways, but they are at the coalface of what the day-to-day challenges are. And it's not just about teacher confidence. So that is one major thing that we think about, because teachers, the vast majority of them, don't have a background in this subject. But it's also kind of challenges like infrastructure and things like access to laptops or access to reliable broadband. Like, you can't take these things in isolation. It's all part of a picture of how accessible these experiences can be. And it's a very difficult environment. Costs are huge. Teacher time is a challenge. So we do whatever we can to make the Microbit both as low cost as it possibly can be, but also for its longevity. While there are two versions of the Microbit, the original one, the V1, and now the V2, we're not in the business of bringing out a new Microbit every year. And you want that investment to really, really last and to be useful. Even if you need to update the firmware or do a few things like that, you should continue to get your value for money and your longevity out of the Microbit tool. So that investment in the teaching and the teachers getting to grips with it, that learning isn't going to go to waste. They can build on that over years and years. And that's what's been happening over the last 10 years. So yeah, we're really, really pleased. It's that kind of compatibility and longevity that really mean a lot to us.
Yeah, no, it is a remarkable journey. I mean, when you say it, and I do think a key piece of this is the whole sustainability of it. And we're not dealing with a product reaching the end of its support. And as we're so well aware from commercial products, that we all have experience of, it really is key that when a school makes an investment in a set of, I know they are quite reasonably priced, but in a set of these devices, that there is that longevity there and there is that sustainable future with them. But it's interesting, I suppose, from my own perspective, I first heard of Microbits. It was at a teacher training event in Dreamspace quite a while ago. And I remember I went straight back after it and I ordered a 5-pack of them. to use with a sport group I was teaching at the time. Look, in fairness, it was on a very basic level in my classroom. Yet I could, I suppose, immediately see the practical and the genuinely useful that this had. It wasn't just another piece of hardware. That's going back to the point we discussed again off air, that idea that digital learning isn't about the hardware, isn't about the bells and whistles. It's about confidence, consistency, and that's sustainability piece and support. I suppose a question I'm getting to here is, from your perspective, what gives Microbit its real value beyond the board?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Pat. I think we talk a lot about physical computing in the foundation and in this space about how using a tool like this that is very tangible and that engages with the world around it. So it sensors the things that it's picking up, the data that it's capturing and utilizing. It's a real life experience that you're having that is similar to other things that you engage with in your life. And I think that, well, it's proven, you know, in research about physical computing that when you make something tangible like that and you're taking it off screen and you're having experience with it out in the playground or in, on the sports pitch or wherever it might be, you are really unlocking that experience. You're embedding those concepts and you're building confidence all the time. And I think there's huge power in that, not just about the programming element or even the use of the Microbit. That starts students and teachers starting to feel that confidence, and self-efficacy is another term that you might hear when it comes to confidence. That affects how people are feeling about themselves, about their abilities, and also about what they like to do and what they enjoy doing, you know. And we've got research that we've done over many years across different projects. And the feedback and the findings that come back through that is that students who previously didn't think technology was for them have discovered something about themselves in this. Mm-hmm. We've some lovely research about students in more challenging contexts who might struggle in the traditional kind of learning model who start to show leadership capabilities when they're working in a project with their peers, or they find they really enjoy the presenting element of talking about their idea, and like the kind of ramifications of that sort of thing from a social impact point of view and from a social mobility point of view as well. You start to unlock these experiences for young people. You literally do not know what difference that could make to their life, you know, the right intervention. And you mentioned DreamSpace. I'm really glad you did, because the amazing work that has been happening there over a number of years with their amazing DreamSpace facility. I've been lucky to visit there a number of times for their DreamSpace showcase, which focuses on the Microbit, but also the great work they're doing as part of an initiative called the STEM Passport for Inclusion with Maynooth University. And that program focuses on DESH schools in the main, where it is a program designed to open female students' eyes to the breadth of technology careers that are out there, but not about necessarily working in tech roles. In the vast sort of space that tech is and growing all the time, the amount of opportunity to support a really rich career that's out there for young people is phenomenal. And the Microbit is used as part of that program for that initial exploration into technology, into computing, into make code. And it starts students on that journey in that program, and they're seeing such phenomenal impact. And we're just really, really thrilled that the Microbit's been recognized, because that's at a secondary school level. DESH schools are using it up and down the country, and it's been recognized for that power and that it can help to start those conversations and inspire that interest.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we hope will happen, you know, and it's happening to great effect already through that program and beyond. So more of this we want to see, absolutely.
Yeah. The team at DreamSpace, in fairness, and I want to make a particular shout out to Michael Barrett, because it's thanks to Michael, it was his steer that led to us having this conversation today, Amy, which I've found so far absolutely fascinating. I'm learning so much myself. But I suppose it's interesting, obviously, the gender inequality, particularly in tech roles, and that's something, it's great to see it being addressed. But it's not just, there's a broader equity piece here, I think, beyond gender. This is key to what you're doing. It's not just an afterthought. You're very much clued into it. When it comes to digital skills and computational thinking, what do you think equitable access actually looks like in the classroom? How do you see it?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Pat. I mean, first and foremost, those with access to devices at home and also knowledge about what technology is, children whose parents might work for tech companies and all of that. And then students who don't have that opportunity, they don't have access to these devices, or they might be in a rural context where they don't have a decent internet connection. Like, these are the vastly different contexts between the haves and the have-nots, if you like, with regards to access to these opportunities. And it is really staggering how, you know, even though broadband is the fastest it's ever been and laptops are at their cheapest, these things are still barriers for students. And not just in Ireland, but around the world and obviously in the global south as well. These are real challenges. And so equity in the classroom, by making microbit obviously as affordable as we can, that's one part of it. But there's so much more to talk about when it comes to equity of access, and accessibility is a major part of that for us. And we can't have a mission to inspire every child if a proportion of the population can't engage with the hardware because of its size or because of how it works or because of the coding platforms that are not accessible to them. So the foundation has enormous priority placed on accessibility of our tools, of our hardware and software. And a project that we've been working on over the last couple of years with Blockly, all the block-based coding paradigms run off Blockly technology. It's formerly a part of Google and now it's part of Raspberry Pi. And we've been really fortunate to be working on a project with them over the last number of years. And the impacts of this, we hope, are going to be felt far and wide for years to come. We're enabling pioneering work into block-based coding, being able to be controlled via keyboard navigation. And that's the first phase of that project. And then the next phase is that block-based coding environments will be able to be controlled using screen readers. So for visually impaired people, or from a keyboard point of view, people with mobility challenges, that they're not locked out of having this experience and being able to engage with Microbit and other coding environments as well. Scratch also runs on Blockly. This work, the research, the testing, the conversations that have gone on with young people about how they feel about technology, what interests them, it is so important that they are part of this conversation about digital skills and that they have access to these tools with modifications that simply have to be made. It's not a nice to have, it's critical that we do it. We will never achieve the goal that we're setting out to achieve about inspiring every child and making the world a fairer place. And in addition to that, by ensuring that we are being inclusive in that way, you're future-proofing these technologies. You will inspire this next generation and you will take those perspectives into the designing of the technology for the future. And that is what has to happen. It wasn't happening up to now. Those perspectives and that diversity wasn't being thought about in the same way. The number of women and people with mobility or visual impairment challenges, when you look at leadership roles in any kind of tech, they're just not there. But by doing these things, we are ensuring a more diverse pipeline of talent, if you like. But it is important. This is the future. And it's also, we're talking about opportunity here. You're talking about opportunity and access to these skills and to these capabilities. And so we need as many diverse perspectives as we can possibly get to be designing these things for us for the future. So we hope we go some way in our thinking there to ensuring that.
It's that leveling of the playing field, I suppose. Exactly. And it's great to see, actually, rather than people just talking about it, making steps towards actually addressing that. And I know what's going on, particularly around Blockly, is it's making great strides.
Yeah.
Thinking about ourselves, I wanted to ask you just a couple of things from, I suppose, the Irish context. You know, I'm listening to this and I'm saying, this sounds superb, but listen, where do I go from here? Am I going to be using is it all going to be US-based resources? Is it all going to be UK-based resources? How do I map it to the Irish curriculum? How do I map it to what I'm trying to do? Where's the best jumping off point?
Yeah. So the Microbit Educational Foundation, one of the pillars, I suppose, of our work is around our education content. And we produce resources, projects, lesson plans, CPD courses, so kind of self-guided modules that you can work through. And we produce all of this in-house and we make it all available for free. It's all on our website. There are no logins or passwords or anything like that to access this content. The only content we have that requires a login is the courses, because that is on a course platform with your modules so that you can pick up where you left off. But otherwise, everything we have is open and accessible. The lesson plans we have are in a Word document format, so they can be adapted and utilized to whatever end that is necessary. They're all available on a Creative Commons license. With regards to this sort of curriculum relevance, and it's a really important point that you raised there, because we are an international organization. We aim to make our resources as adaptable to any teaching context and any curriculum that we can. We do have some resources mapped to English national curriculum, as well as the CSTA standards in the United States, and also two newer frameworks around AI, which we can talk about in a moment. So in terms of the mapping piece for the Irish context, we're increasingly starting to have conversations with IDGES. So obviously they were PDST, previously, and also having lots of conversations around the new curriculum coming in for science, technology and engineering for primary. And we're really lucky to say that the partnerships that we've been cultivating over a number of years throughout Ireland, across obviously with the Dreamspace Network, fantastic work happening out of TU Dublin as well, their computer science research centre, as well as through lots of brilliant initiatives such as Our Kids Code, who are doing brilliant work too. So there's lots of things happening with Microbit embedded into them in the Irish context. And we're acutely aware that this new curriculum is coming, and we want to ensure that teachers can see that they will be absolutely able to utilize and get the best out of the new curriculum and use Microbit to help them deliver on that. But everything that we have available at the moment is live. It's on our website and teachers can access it and engage. But we would love to do more with Irish institutions to look at that mapping piece to see if there's more we can offer at that kind of local level. It's such an exciting time in Ireland right now for this space. The new curriculum is coming at such an important time. And we know change in curriculum, they take a really long time. It's difficult to do and it can be very overwhelming, but there is support out there and it's available for free. And we'd love to hear of use cases and examples of teachers who are using this content and how it's helping them. And if they need support, you know, to reach out to us as well. We want to know what's happening out there. And, you know, the SESI group, they post things into that. And that's a brilliant repository and resource for teachers as well. So I'd recommend people getting linked up with them too. But yeah, it's a really, really exciting time in Ireland. And we're looking to see what more happens now over the next couple of years. But we'll be there to support.
Another word you hear quite a lot in education circles is community of practice.
Yes.
Or COPs. Just from looking at this from the outside, the Microbit community of practice is absolutely key to what you do.
It absolutely is. And it's a really lovely opportunity for me to talk about a program that we run. It's a volunteer program called the Microbit Champions Community. And what that is essentially educators, experts around the world who love Microbit, who are doing great things with it in the classroom. They have an opportunity to join us in an annual cohort. And it is essentially just as you described. It's a community of practice where people can come together on a monthly call to share their ideas, their teaching strategies, cool projects they've been working on, but also to inspire new ways of using the device or new ways to engage your students. Or if you're supporting other teachers, if you're working like in a cluster of schools or you've got some sort of role in that capacity, you can find some really nice ways to integrate that technology and try some new things. We're really lucky to have had a couple of brilliant Irish-based educators who have done that and worked with us in this capacity for a number of years. Julie Power, who is a phenomenal educator doing great work, will be known to many of your listeners, I'm sure. Julie's done great work, part of the EU Code Week initiative as well. And that helps us to stay in touch in terms of the foundation about what the challenges might be on the ground, how we might be able to support. But it keeps us in touch and also helps people to connect with each other. Because often with, even though the specifics of a curriculum might be very, you may need to be very tailored, obviously, to that specific curriculum. A lot of the challenges in this area that people come up against are common. You might be in different countries, but you're going to face similar things like teacher confidence or a lack of time in the curriculum or the perception that there's a lack of time in the curriculum when really for tools like Microbit, like digital is everywhere. So there's no reason why you can't integrate something like Microbit that's as open-ended as it is into your science, into your maths, into your PE. And it's not about shoving technology into all these places, but rather, as I said before, about how it enhances that learning and makes it very personal for young people and engaging, and they want to do more of this. And why shouldn't they? It's having that impact and they're having a good time doing it and learning along the way. And as I said, you build that confidence. The teachers get to use it in a couple of ways. Then you can see different ways that they can start to integrate it. So it's just getting more out of it, really, for that investment that gets made. And then to the other question about where teachers can get started, everything we have available is written from the perspective of assuming no prior knowledge. We don't expect anybody to be coming at this technology with a PhD in computer science. You know, the vast majority of teachers, certainly in primary, but even increasingly in secondary, they may find themselves in a situation where they need to teach this or they might have responsibility to, or there's an opportunity to do so. And they're like, well, I don't know even where I might begin. And my advice there is to any teacher that might be thinking about it or isn't sure whether they want to give it a go, is to just give it a go. You'll really surprise yourself. It's very easy to get started with something like this. You just plug it in, pairs very easily. There's no download. There's no complicated software installations or anything like that. It's all run off web-based coding editors, and that's all intentional. The user experience is intended to be as simple as it can possibly be. to support the richness of context that it's being used in. And we take that very, very seriously in our tech and our product team. So yeah, I'd love to hear what people think and you know, how they're getting on, and to share with us across social media and everything. We want to see those stories and see those that impact that's happening.
Yeah, look, it's great to see that there is such a supportive network there. And I would particularly zone in on your point about this can be integrated across the board. It's limitless, nearly. It depends on where it fits. I do often think, and I think a similar thing when you think about other, I suppose, hardware like Raspberry Pis, that they have somehow managed to get siloed off into the computer science under that umbrella, and people say, oh, that's nothing to do with me, that's for the techies. And I think the fact that you're coming at this and you're assuming absolutely no prior knowledge, and you're saying this integrates right across the curriculum, and it's creating, I suppose, learning opportunities that are much more engaging and hands-on discovery learning, whatever you're having yourself, as they say. But unfortunately, I mean, time has beaten us. I could talk to you for the rest of the day about this because I find it fascinating. But there's a couple of things I want to close off. Key thing is, where do you see this going? I mean, what's coming next for the Microbit Foundation, and what should teachers keep an eye out for? And I suppose, if I'm going more broadly on it, what excites you most right now about the future of digital learning and computational thinking for young people?
Brilliant. Yeah, well, for us at the Foundation, you know, obviously we're in the same boat as everybody right now, where the noise and the kind of discussion all around AI and to AI or not to AI, and, you know,
the elephant in the room, Amy, is
exactly. And that's happening a lot. But rather than worry too much about it, we decided we just do something about it. And so for us at the Foundation, our approach to AI is to explaining not how to use generative AI tools and ChatGPT and all that, but rather, like we do with all the other stuff, it's about breaking it down and thinking about what are the foundational principles of these things. And ultimately, AI is data, and I'm no authority on it, but I do know that my basic understanding is that AI is data. Generative AI tools, large language models, they're running on massive amounts of data. So from our point of view in the Foundation, we have developed, in partnership with our brilliant friends at Aarhus University in Denmark, we've created a fantastic web-based tool called Microbit Create AI. And what that does is, it's a really simple platform that enables you to capture samples of data based on movement data. So you can connect up your Microbit and you can train a model on some data samples. And it's not as scary as it sounds. It is really, really easy to use. You click record and then you can start clapping, record some samples, and then choose another class. So the next one might be a wave or a jump or whatever you decide. You record your samples and then you click train your model. And then the information that you've provided, the data that you, crucially, you the student, you the teacher, the data you have captured in that moment, in that web-based tool, is consolidated. And then there will be a prediction or an inaccuracy measure on the action that you were then doing, whether it's a clap or whether it's a jump or whether it's a wave. So what you do when you do that really simple exercise in using Create AI, you're starting to explain to young people and teachers and whoever's using it that language, like training models, like what does all that stuff actually mean? Like what's actually going on there? In its simplest terms, it is data, it is samples, it is capturing something in the moment that you've defined, you've decided if you're going to record waves or claps or jumps or bounces or whatever you might choose, whatever you're having yourself. And you can start to engage and see that live data on screen. And it's so powerful because you're actually kind of lifting the lid on it a little bit. You're making it kind of tangible and real. The crucial thing to remember with this tool is that there's no data being stored anywhere. You're not taking photographs. You're not doing anything like that. You're literally using movement sensor data that's on the Microbit, and you can create a very simple model that way. It's called supervised machine learning, is essentially what is going on there in that experience. And there's other tools that do things like this, but there's nothing at the moment that we know of that combines movement sensor data on a device like Microbit that can engage with the real world in an instantaneous fashion. So when you're explaining this to the students, you're getting them up out of their seats, they're jumping around, they're being active, they're participating in the learning. And it's very personal because it's their jumps, it's their claps. You're giving them those tools and making this incredibly personal while also continuing on a learning journey. If they're already familiar with Microbit, you're not introducing new things. You're doing something that they've used before, but in a new way. For us right now, that's what we're really excited about when it comes to this world of AI and machine learning, because we see the opportunity to explore these concepts and provide that foundational understanding about what's going on you build upon that then and you scaffold into these more complex things and complex content. You have to start there with that foundational understanding. That's what we believe anyway, because you're building literacy, you're building confidence all the while when you do that. And so for us, we're really excited that we're developing new resources that help you use this tool in the classroom, really straightforward, step-by-step resources, this fantastic material already available. And again, it's all free and we want people to use it, have a play, see what they think about it. And so, you know, this sort of thing is the future, but we will always come back to those literacies, like what are the core principles we want students to grasp and understand, rather than the big scary bogeyman of AI. You start to demystify this stuff and give them those literacies and everybody will move forward in a more confident fashion, we hope. And then obviously in the background, we're doing loads of thinking in the broader space as well, which is really exciting. It's a phenomenally exciting world to be in. But I'm really proud of the approach that we take to this stuff and how deeply we think about these things, because it's very easy to, you'll have seen at the BET show where we met, like there's tons and tons of AI tools and AI Buddy and all these kinds of things that are out there. And you have to be critical about these things because there's a lot going on in this space. And we always ask the question, is it teaching with AI or is it teaching about AI? Is it teaching what AI actually is and what's going on there? And you know, you ask yourself one of those questions and that can help you sort of get to the nub of what's really going on here. But very much for us, it's about the data literacies, the AI literacies, and all the content we have in this area are already mapped to the OECD frameworks, the UNESCO frameworks about AI. These are the kind of standardized documentation that exists now that sort of call out what the specific learning should look like and what students should be getting to grips with. We have mapped Create AI lessons to those frameworks already. So this thinking's already been done. So we can reassure teachers and schools that this isn't about getting kids using ChatGPT to do their homework for them. It's actually a foundational understanding. And, you know, as you said, I could talk about this all day, but I know we're up to time. But I would really encourage anyone who's curious to check it out, have a look at it, see what you think. And we'd love to hear people's feedback. So, yeah, give it a go.
For someone who didn't know that the foundation existed up until a few months ago, I'm certainly learning on the job today. But I think the key thing, this is very much focused on, yes, it's the microbit, it's adaptability, you're looking at sustainability, but you're coming back to teaching and learning. That's the key focus. It really is heartening to see the great work that organizations like the Foundation are doing in this space, because particularly, we don't know what's ahead of us, but I mean, if we keep our focus on what's core and then the technology after that, I think we'll stand in good stead. But I really appreciate you, Emmy, taking the time today to join me. The conversation, as I said, has been really eye-opening for me. I now understand the microbit ecosystem. You've told me about the great scaffolded supports and I think the vibrant community. One thing just to say before I finish up, all of that will be in the show notes. So Emmy, look, really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the TeachNet podcast. We certainly have another one around that new AI program you have. We would certainly be delighted if you would join us further down the line on this microbit journey.
Oh, absolutely, Pat. I'd be only too delighted to. And thank you so much for the invitation. Really, really pleased to get to talk about our work. So yeah, looking forward to the next time.
Thanks, Amy.